Our speaker today is Tamara Lawrence. She's been here this week presenting at the Conference of the Canadian Peace Research Association being held at the U of R from the 30th of May to the 1st of June. So one of Canada's top peace researchers, Ms. Lawrence will be presenting a paper on women, peace, and security, a feminist critique of Canada's 2017 defense policy and foreign policy priorities. Tamara Lawrence is a PhD student in global governance at the Vassili School for International Affairs at Wilfrid Laurier University. She graduated with an MA in International Politics and Security Studies from the University of Bradford in the United Kingdom in 2015. She was awarded the Rotary International World Peace Fellowship and was a senior researcher for the International Peace Bureau in Switzerland. Tamara is currently on the board of the Canadian Voice of Women for Peace and the International Advisory Committee of Global Network Against Nuclear Power and Weapons in Space. She is a member of the Canadian Pugwash Group and the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Tamara was a co-founding member of the Vancouver Island Peace and Disarmament Network in 2016. Tamara has an LLB, JSD, and MBA. That's a lot of Latin initials there. Specializing in environmental law and management from Dalhousie University. She is the former executive director of the Nova Scotia Environmental Network and co-founder of the East Coast Environmental Law Association. Her research interests are the military's impacts on the environment and climate change, the intersection of peace and security, gender and international relations, and military sexual violence. So today at the Unitarian Fellowship, we are honored to have Ms. Lawrence present today's present service. Thank you.
So let me begin by saying thank you very much for this invitation to speak to you this morning. I've been in Regina since Tuesday, so I'm here for Congress, but I've had the opportunity to attend some great activist events this week with local people. So I've had a chance to go to the Peace Vigil on Thursday downtown. I've had a chance to go to the Mother Earth Justice Advocates meeting. I've had a chance to watch the film Indian Horse. Has anybody seen Indian Horse? It's an excellent film. I encourage everyone to watch it. I've also had a chance to go to the First Nations camp on the legislature, and that was just great. And I've gone to a peace picnic. So I just want to say that you have a wonderful community. So many people working really hard for peace and justice and social, for peace and justice and, to make the world a better place. It's really awesome. So this morning I'm going to talk to you about reimagining Dr. Martin Luther King's message. Why peace and love matter for Canadian climate and defense policies. This year is the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. He was 39 years old at the time that he was killed. He was a father with four kids. His wife, of course, was Coretta Scott King. 4 years before he was killed, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. He was the youngest person that won the Nobel Peace Prize at the age of 35. Many people have heard of Dr. King's most famous speech called I Have a Dream that he gave at the Washington Mall, right? You've all heard of Dr. King's message, and you know that he was a great civil rights leader. But what many people don't know is that Dr. King was also very outspoken against the war in Vietnam, and he linked his civil rights message with his message about poverty and economic justice with war and militarism. So I would like to talk to you this morning about and frame the remarks that I'm making about Dr. King's most important but least known speech called Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break the Silence. On April 4th, 1967, a year before Dr. King was assassinated, he gave a speech at the Riverside Church in Manhattan in New York. The speech, the church was absolutely filled. There was 1,000 people. It was standing room only, and there were 1,000 more people outside trying to hear what he had to say. And this speech is the speech where Dr. King laid out the importance of of his concern about civil rights and linking it to economic justice and speaking out against the war in Vietnam. So it's in this speech where Dr. King says that the greatest purveyor of violence is my own country, the United States. He also made this quote, "We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered." The year before Dr. King... After this speech, and a year before Dr. King was killed, he had been working on the Poor People's Campaign. He was trying to bring the thousands and thousands of poor people across the country to converge on the Washington Mall and to have an occupation. It's really the first example that I know of an occupation being planned. And they were going to sit on the Mall until the U.S. administration ended the war in Vietnam and started moving that money into the communities and helping employ people and build the communities in the United States. So this was the 1968 Poor People's Campaign. And of course, Dr. King, this was planned for August of 68. But of course, Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis on April 4th, 1968. And he was in Memphis to support the garbage workers. The garbage workers, some of you might know that they were not able to sit in the main part of the truck when they were going around the city picking up garbage. They had to sit back in the cab with the garbage. And so this is why the black men, the garbage workers, would walk around in the when they were on strike, not picking up the garbage, and they had those signs that said, "I am a man. I am a man. I'm not garbage. I shouldn't be sitting in the cab," because they were getting crushed by the machines. And so Dr. King was there in Memphis supporting the garbage workers, and he was saying to the U.S. administration, "If you weren't spending so much more money on the war in Vietnam, you'd have the money at home to hire people, to get them to work, and to build up the United States." So why is this message so important for us today? It is. Dr. King's message in his speech in the Riverside Church is just as urgent for us today, especially in Canada, and I'd like to show you why. This is the state of Canadian militarism. Some of you might know that this past week in Ottawa, the largest arms show took place, and Canada's Minister of Defense made a big announcement. Canada is selling weapons right now to Egypt, to Israel, to Saudi Arabia. There's this the worst humanitarian crisis is in Yemen right now. Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen. We're also selling weapons to Bahrain and many other countries that are involved in human rights violations. Canada is refusing to sign and ratify the new UN ban treaty to prohibit nuclear weapons. Canada, France, and the United States helped to overthrow the democratically elected government in Haiti. This is the government of Aristide in 2004. This is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Canada is refusing to have a national inquiry into the torture of Afghan detainees during our 12-year war in Afghanistan. Canada, some of Canadians don't realize, that Canada led the NATO bombing raid of Libya in 2011 that has led to this refugee crisis from North Africa across Mediterranean, people trying to escape the crisis in North Africa and are on boats very treacherously trying to cross into Europe. Canada right now has soldiers along the border of Russia in Eastern Europe. We have soldiers in Latvia, Poland, and the Ukraine very much provoking Russia. We have something called the Lima Group that Canada's participating in, which is trying to destabilize the socialist government in Venezuela under Maduro. We have special forces that operate around the world with little parliamentary oversight and no public oversight. We've had chronic problems with sexual harassment and sexual assault in the Canadian military. The largest federally funded program for youth in this country is the cadet program. So the federal government has a plan to militarize youth in this country. Right now, Canada is involved in something called Operation Impact, which is literally fueling the violent conflict in Syria and Iraq that's leading to a refugee crisis from the Middle East as people are trying to get to Europe. And we have a new dangerous defense policy that was just announced last June. So I'm going to speak about these two issues to you now. So this is the fighter jet, that the CF-18 fighter jet that Canada used for its NATO bombing in Libya, and it's the fighter jet that Canada used for bombing Syria and Iraq from about October 2014 until February 2016. We're no longer engaging in airstrikes, but we are doing all of the refueling of of the U.S.-led coalition forces. These fighter jets consume 4,400 pounds of fuel in an hour. They use a specialized fuel called JP-8, which is more carbon-intensive than commercial fuel. This operation that we're in, called Operation Impact, is part of a broader U.S.-led coalition called Operation Inherent Resolve. You can see our flag there. And this is an operation to try to defeat ISIS in the Middle East. Okay? So there's Operation Impact. This is from the Department of National Defense. And you can see that Canada, up until May 12th, Canada has delivered almost 59,000 pounds of fuel to coalition aircraft. Air Wars is a consortium of independent journalists that are operating in the region, and they've been monitoring the coalition forces. So also the U.S. Department of Defense does release some statistics, but they try to scrutinize those statistics to make sure if they're accurate. So Air Wars, these journalists in the region, have estimated that there's been 29,000 coalition airstrikes and that there's been 107,000 bombs that have dropped on Syria and Iraq for the last 4 years. That's 2,500 bombs that have dropped on those two countries every single month for the last 4 years. So just imagine the fuel consumption of this, all the fighter jets and the refuelers that are involved in this coalition mission. So I wrote to the Minister of National Defense and I asked him, I said, are you estimating the Department of National Defense's greenhouse gases? Are you doing that? And he replied back in his letter, no, we are not estimating or calculating the greenhouse gas emissions, the climate impacts from Operation Impact. So this past November, the Department of National Defense released its first strategy on energy and environment. And in that document, they also mention that it says here, given the unpredictable changes in operational tempo, the federal reduction target will not include emissions from military activities and operations. So it's very important for Canadians to know, because many Canadians are very concerned about climate change, that military emissions are not calculated, they're not part of our greenhouse gas national inventories, and they're also not part of the national reduction targets. All military emissions from all countries around the world have these exemptions, and that's because of what the U.S. delegation did during the Kyoto Protocol negotiations in the mid-1990s. They were able to secure these exemptions. But it will be, yes, so this is very problematic. So militarism is not good for the climate. And for those of us who are concerned about climate change and the environment, we need to be aware of this. Militarism is also not good for the environment. This is a table from the Federal Contaminated Sites Inventory. It's a public database that any Canadian can look at to see about the contaminated sites in this country. And the agency with one of the most contaminated sites is the Department of National Defense. So they have 900 active level one, high level, very contaminated sites in this country. And this is because the Department of National Defense is one of the largest consumers of hazardous material that they need for their equipment and vehicles, and they're also one of the largest producers of hazardous waste. So we know that that militarism is not good for the climate and it's not good for the environment. But let's talk about Canada's new defense policy and foreign policy. But we're going to start with this announcement that President Trump made last March. So he announced a hard power budget, right? He's going to massively increase U.S. military spending, and he's going to cut the funding to the State Department and to the Environmental Protection Agency. Well, 4 months later, our Minister of Foreign Affairs, Minister Freeland, stood up in our House of Commons and announced our new foreign policy priorities. And she said we need to have hard power to support the global order. And in her address, she mentioned military 10 times and the need to increase military spending. So you can see there she calls for hard power, more military spending to support the global order. Well, let's pause for a moment and think about what this global order is. This global order is us in the wealthy West with our well-financed militaries, and half the world's population living in poverty at $2.50 a day, right? We have Canadian mining companies that are operating around the world and taking advantage of poor countries and causing environmental and humanitarian problems. So this language is very problematic. The next day after the Minister of Foreign Affairs stood up and announced our new foreign policy priorities, the Minister of Defense stood up and announced our new defense policy. It's called Strong, Secure, and Engage. This is what it looks like here. So in this new policy, Canada is going to increase military spending. We're going to spend $553 billion on the military over the next 20 years. For what? To maintain high-level warfighting. There was no political dissent at all in this announcement. So this is what military spending looks like in context. So in 2016, military spending was $28 billion. Our overseas development assistance, what we give to other countries to help with development, was $5 billion. And Environment and Climate Change Canada's budget was $1.5 billion. I passed out this sheet, and let's look at it together for a moment, because many people haven't seen this in Canada. So this landscape here. Here. You should have a look. So this, what you're looking at right here, is Table 1 from Volume 2 of the Public Accounts of Canada. They come in three volumes. What's handy about this is that it's a one-page snapshot of about 1,500 pages. So if you look on the right-hand side, you see revenues. This is the money that we bring in. So you can see for individual Canadians' personal income taxes, we contribute $144 billion. Corporations, not so much. They only contributed $41 billion. About 50 years ago, those numbers were reversed. You keep scrolling your finger down, and you see that we bring in money to the federal government from excise taxes, return on investments, foreign exchange rate, for a total there at the bottom of $295 billion. Now, when you look on the right-hand side, you can see expenses. At the top there is transfer payments. This is money from the federal government to the provinces, primarily for the health transfer, which is for the hospitals, and the social transfer, which is primarily for post-secondary education. And so you can see that $183 billion goes from the federal government to the provinces for services. But then you see another heading that says other program expenses. These are our major federal departments. And if you scroll your finger down slowly, you can see there environment and climate change, $1.5 billion. Indigenous and Northern Affairs, $1.4 billion. You see national defense, $28 billion. Public safety, which is $10 billion. That is the agency that's responsible for border control, prisons, and CSIS and the RCMP. And then you see something called $5 billion other ministry. That's Veterans Affairs, mostly Veterans Affairs. And then the total deficit at the bottom you can see the total deficit at the bottom. So this is how Canada is spending its money right now. But one thing that I did is, it's important to see military spending over time. So I went back through the public accounts. This is all available online. And you can see that military spending went from $8 billion in 1997 to today, $28 billion. But federal environment spending has flatlined at about $1 billion for the last 20 years, even though we know that the ecological crisis is getting worse. The state of our oceans, the state of our air, the state of our forests, and climate change. So this is a real concern. And this is why Dr. King's message about military spending is so important. So you think to yourself, but Tamara, I heard that we're doing peacekeeping. With all of this money that the Department of National Defense has, we are not doing peacekeeping. We haven't been doing peacekeeping in 20 years. This is from the United Nations peacekeeping statistics, and you can see that we are even lower than the United States. We're ranked 74th in the world, and we have only 44 soldiers that are wearing blue helmets around the world. It's the poor countries like Nepal, Bangladesh, Ethiopia, and China that have thousands of peacekeepers in the world. So this is Dr. King's, one of the comments that he made in this important speech that he gave at the Riverside Church. A nation that continues to spend year after year more on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. Okay, that's very strong, but what military spending and militarism is preventing us from doing is achieving our Paris Agreement goals by 2030 and decarbonizing by 2050. We need all of this military spending to help with the transition that we need to a green, sustainable economy and to meet the poverty challenges that we have. So you can see that right now for climate change, we're on the black line there, and where we need to be if we're to meet the Paris Agreement target is down here at 523 megatons of CO2. The other thing is that military spending is preventing the international community from achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. Who's heard of the Sustainable Development Goals, right? The 17 targets that the international community is trying to meet by 2030. The agenda is called Transforming Our World, and you can see all of the goals that it has. Well, right now, the international community, the big Western countries, are spending $1.7 trillion on the military every single year. Mostly it's the United States to fight wars abroad. But if we stopped doing that and we took that money and we invested it into this, we could achieve these goals by 2030. That's what the economics shows. So, in closing, there's just a couple of more slides. I want us to just think for a moment. What would it mean if we were to change our defense policy, to change our foreign policy, to move the money from militarism into our urgent environmental and social needs? This would be a foreign policy and a defense policy based on love. It would be, if we had real love internationally, we wouldn't need a military. We wouldn't need an institution for coercion, force, and violence. So Dr. King, in his speech, I'll just read the first line there. He says, the end is reconciliation. And we understand reconciliation. Now, Canada, our country, we're engaged in that with our First Nations community. We need to still do so much more. The end is redemption. The end is creation of beloved community. It is the type of spirit and this type of love that can transform opposers into friends. And this is what we need. This is what we need. So in the United States, they are reviving the Poor People's Campaign. They have been working on this for 10 years. And just last month, they had actions across the country. This is an example of a sit-in that they had at the state house in Missouri. And you can see the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. It's to end systemic racism, poverty, militarism, environmental destruction, and related injustices, and to build a sustainable and participatory society. And then I would just like to close by sharing a couple of examples of hope. When I was in the UK, I was there from 2013 to 2015, I got involved in an organization called the Campaign Against the Arms Trade, and they produced this amazing report called Arms to Renewables, converting jobs from the defense industry to civilian industries to have things like renewable technology. We need to have a program like this in Canada. The Canadian Voice of Women for Peace, we have a campaign called Demilitarize, Decarbonize, Stop the Wars, Stop the Warming. And when I was in the United States in 2014 for that big march for the climate, there were Americans holding banners like this that said, windmills, not weapons. And then this is the final thing. In November of 2015, during the Conference of the Parties climate change negotiations in Paris, the Indigenous Environmental Network, it was called the It Takes Roots delegation. It was a huge delegation of Indigenous peoples from around the world, and they came up with a common statement that they sent out to the media. And the statement was: "No war, no warming. Building an economy for people and the planet." And this is the quote that they have. I'll just read the end there. It says: "We are calling on world leaders to move toward inclusion over exclusion, renewable clean energy over pollution profiteering, cutting emissions at source over carbon trading and offset regimes, and peace over militarism." So I hope that sometime this year, I've given you the copy of Dr. King's speech, Beyond Vietnam. I hope that you will find 20 minutes and read that speech carefully and reflect upon what it might mean for us in Canada and what more we can do. And then finally, I'll just share a couple of upcoming national events with you. There's a huge peace conference taking place in September in Toronto. It's being organized by World Beyond War. There's going to be amazing peace activists from across North America coming. And I encourage you to get involved with Peace Quest Regina here. There's a big event happening in Kingston in November, and I know that some people from Regina are coming. But finally, just to say that I hope in the work that you're doing, if it's working on overseas development projects, if it's working on environmental projects and you're concerned about climate change, if it's working about poverty and First Nations community, part of the answer is peace, is moving this money that we're wasting on war and weapons and investing it into a sustainable, just, and peace future for Canadians. So thank you very much for listening. And on the back of the sheet that I passed out, there are some resources. And I will also just let you know, I have three copies of this excellent paper that Peter Prebble had shared with us at Congress. And it's called Addressing Climate Change and Nuclear Weapons Proliferation, The Contribution Saskatchewan Could Make. It's excellent. There's three copies. And I have three copies of this Space Alert. And there's an article in here that I wrote called We Must Demilitarize to Decarbonize. And then also, I'm hoping that at the end of the service, we can take a group picture, because I have these really great signs, and it would be really fantastic to to take a picture of all of you, if you're supportive of the message that I shared with you this morning, to take a picture and stand with me on this. Okay, thank you so much.